Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Off the First. It is July the 10th, 2023. I'm Ryan Ballingy. It's good to have you here with us. It's been a weird couple of weeks, to be honest with you. I have not been home, but just for today, I got home last night. I've been in Tennessee seeing some family, played in the Pro-Am for the Senior LPGA Championship out in Indiana. Went and did that for 3 days, came back here for about, I don't know, 16 hours, then went to Huntsville, Alabama, and then to Crossville, Tennessee. Had a lovely time, but obviously didn't have a whole lot of time to or a whole lot of privacy in a house with like 25 people, all family, to be able to record shows. So I wanted to do kind of one catch-up show here. And then we're going to do a video version, kind of the normal version, today. And we'll talk a little bit more in that version about what I feel is kind of like the big headline of the current news around LIV and the PGA Tour and all that stuff, which is Randall Stephenson, who is the former head of AT&T, has resigned from the board of the PGA Tour effective immediately. We'll talk a little bit about that, what that might mean. What I think that implies, and to kind of give that away, I think that means they've probably got the votes to be able to move this thing forward if they can get to an agreement. But we'll talk a little bit about that on this afternoon's episode. But I just kind of wanted to go back over some things from the last couple of weeks, just a couple of things, and talk about them with you on an audio version of the show, and then we'll do kind of a broader set of or the more current set of topics a little bit later today. First thing I want to talk about, Jay Monahan's coming back to work, apparently next week. His medical emergency is over. He has never really explained what that is, although he did say in a letter to players and the board that he's coming back. He feels much better, appreciates the privacy around that. Who knows what that all was, but effectively he was out about a month. Didn't attend the U.S. Open sometime after June 6th. And that first players meeting that week in Canada, went on medical leave for a medical emergency, and really has kind of left things in the hands of Jimmy Dunn and Ed Herlihy and Tyler Dennis and the long-running staff of EVPs that are down at Ponte Vedra Beach. And seemingly not a whole lot has happened, but again, as we talked about the last time we did the show, we don't know what's happening because we didn't know what was happening in the first place. So no one really knows what's going on. Seems like everyone is clamoring to figure out what is happening. And that's on both sides, by the way. I think the PGA Tour players are very much in the dark, and they feel very much in the dark because they were in the first place. And so they don't know if they're being told nothing on purpose or that there's nothing really happening or what exactly. There is a lot to work out on this deal, and I don't know where they're at with it, neither do the players, frankly. I don't even know if the players, the handful of players that are on the policy board, know it. Which, by the way, it's an 11-person board. Head of the president of the PGA of America is a non-voting member. He's the 11th member. 5 players, 4 independent directors. And the fact is, I don't think anyone really knows. I think the only people who know are the architects, and perhaps maybe now Jay Monahan, who's probably been apprised of everything the whole time. And I don't know, again, the medical condition in which he finds himself. But he's going to be coming back to work. So there have been some, like, quite a bit, actually, I think, of loud speculation that he was not coming back. And it seemed to come with a lot of confidence that speculation was made that, oh, well, we don't even know if he's coming back. As almost not to say that it was like a tinfoil hat thing, but like, no, this really, he could be walking away thing. Well, that's not the case, apparently. At least not right now. Maybe he sees this thing through and then walks away. I think that's a possibility to entertain. But he has installed himself as the CEO of this potential new company, NewCo, as they're calling it, in the operating or the framework agreement, what they're going to call here. So I don't think he's trying to walk away from this role, and I think anyone that was suggesting otherwise was kind of doing so foolishly, because if you negotiate for yourself a future position as effectively the CEO of men's professional golf, why would you walk away from the job that you need to have to get to the next one, right? He has this job as the commissioner of the PGA Tour, and he's going to continue to have that job until he becomes the CEO of NewCo, whatever that turns into. That's where he is at. And if it doesn't work out, then he can be the PGA Tour commissioner and continue along that path. And if he does become the CEO of the NewCo, then perhaps he can appoint another commissioner to be the lead of the PGA Tour organization, and he himself upgrades to being the CEO of whatever this company is and whatever it all looks like in the end. Again, who knows what all of that is. But Jay Monahan was not going anywhere. And I mean Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour, not Jay Monahan, the winning caddy at the U.S. Women's Open. Shout out to that Jay Monahan for helping Allison Corpuz win the U.S. Women's Open at Pebble Beach. We'll talk about that on today's episode this afternoon. But that seems to be kind of where we're at with it. And moving forward, I think it's very clear Monahan's job here is to try to keep his player directors somewhat in the loop and on board. And Peter Malnati, who is one of the members, one of the five player directors, did an interview. I think it was the week of the Rocket Mortgage, but it might have been the week of the Travelers, with Adam Shupak of Golf Week. And if you can go find it, it's worth a quick read, because I think it gives you the perspective of someone where he was against it, and I think he still is kind of against it. And I think he leaned in on some of the reasons the tour gave, and I think he has moral, ethical concerns about the sourcing of the money, just like I would if I were in his position. And he said, but he kind of wants the deal to happen. But I thought the most intriguing thing about it was the way he described the tour's financial situation. And it was described by him as though basically saying, for some reason, the tour is in a bad financial position or needs to be in a better financial position. And that's why they're doing this deal. But it sounds to me like these guys haven't seen the financial statements to know one way or the other how bad the tour's financial position is or how good it is. I still continue to maintain the tour's financial position is not bad. It really isn't. It may have spent a whole heck of a lot of money on legal services, lawyers, those types of things. I'm willing to acknowledge that. The lawyers they have hired for the multiple legal fronts on which they find themselves are not cheap. They're thousands of dollars an hour. If not, let's say a minimum four-figure an hour kind of lawyer, and they've got a whole ton of them. If you ever see any of the filings for any of the cases that they are in or have been in, there's like seven of them, and then those are just the people that signed on, and then you've got to have all of the associates underneath, and you've got the legal assistants. I mean, none of that stuff's cheap. That racks up really quickly, especially in this kind of lawsuit. Antitrust lawyers are not cheap. And so I understand and acknowledge that. But the tour also has an enormous rights fee agreement that saw a huge increase just a couple of years ago. And that extra money goes into the kitty every year. That is not all universally paid out. And the escalators and contracts with sponsors are separate from that. They happen naturally. That's not to say that the tour has not put reserves into place here to build up these designated event purses. They subsidize the overwhelming majority of those purses for this year. And they have done so with the hope that their long-running sponsors will see the value and then agree to foot the eight-figure bill to keep these increases moving forward. At the same time, they're going to have to try to assuage sponsors that find themselves in a new situation being a non-designated event, sandwiched between designated events, trying to find meaning and support, and frankly, a value proposition for sponsoring the PGA Tour. And oh, by the way, they've got to do that amid the backdrop of a lot of fans who are not happy about this. I don't know the entire fallout of that, but that's not easy to accomplish. That doesn't mean they're not financially in decent shape, though, because they've got contracts that get them most of the way toward $1 billion in annual revenue on just media rights deals, which is basically double what they had the prior contract. Not exactly, but pretty close. 60%, 70% increase once you start to attach value to the ESPN streaming deal. Now, yes, they did lose Golf TV and Discovery, which that was a sizable amount of money, but I'm pretty sure they made out okay in the end. So let's call it, let's just be generous, a 60% increase. That's still a lot of money to work with that you didn't have before. So as to say that the tour is in bad financial shape, I'm just not buying that argument. And I don't think anyone should. I think the reality is for Peter Malnati, any player on the board, for any player who's worried about what's going on with the tour's financial position, the tour carries debt. The tour carries financing. Pretty much every business does, by the way. And they've got that to deal with, but they also have tons and tons of money coming in from media relationships that should allow them to sustain themselves. So I think the point of this is not necessarily to shore up what their finances are or were. That's going to be fine. What I think this is about is, as Jay Monahan said, trying to take a competitor off the board and making them a teammate in some sense. What that all looks like, though, is still very much in doubt. And I don't think anyone on either side really knows. The LIV people seem absolutely convinced that they're going to be here to stay and everything's going to work out and the franchises are going to explode in value and LIV's going to be where it's at and all that stuff. I don't know that. I don't believe the franchise thing works. But one thing I will point out, and I think you have to try, again, this is about how you consume media, but you kind of have to read between the lines and everything that you read. You have to read motive. You have to read opportunity. You have to read why someone would do something into the things that you're reading. And the entity that covers LIV the most directly is Sports Illustrated. And that's because they have a relationship with Norman. Their overarching company represents his brand in franchising deals. It's all, we've talked about it before. There's a huge conflict of interest there, but they don't care and they cover it. So you have to kind of take that for what it is. But they do the coverage, and they've been at the London event, which was this past weekend, and they're writing about how, you know, from LIV's point of view, again, there's nothing you can verify, but you know, they've got all kinds of people interested in franchises, and they're talking to them now that the framework deal is in place, and blah, blah, blah. And all of that is fine. I'm not necessarily entirely doubting it, kind of doubting it, but not entirely doubting it, because LIV has said a lot of things, frankly, in the last year and change that are patently false. They're just not true. So you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. But if you see some sliver of truth in that, and I think there is reason to see some, then you have to make the leap of faith. I think this is the one I'm making, or leap of judgment, not leap of faith, that what they are trying to accomplish here before this deal gets done is to increase the value of LIV, because it is currently almost nothing. They bring almost nothing to the table. They have no pertinent revenue. They have no significant ticket sales. They obviously have no media rights deal of value. Yes, they signed up with some airport streaming service so they can show their events in airports. That's fine. Nothing wrong with that. Hey, viewers are viewers from their perspective. But that's not going to be some kind of massive deal. So the goal for LIV here in the next 5 months, 5.5 months before they get to some kind of signature, and this framework agreement doesn't just run out, although they can agree to extend it, is they've got to build up the value of LIV. So all of a sudden, I'm getting emails from the Majestics, one of their teams. I got, three in the last 2 weeks. I've heard more from them than I have from my family. And they're all little deals with, and who knows what the values of these are, but deals with a Web3 company, which probably not a good time for that since NFT prices are tanking. But there's a deal with them. There's a crypto marketplace attached to that. There's these digital advertising bags that are probably not a whole lot of a deal, but whatever. They had some other deal. Like they're trying to build the value of, quote unquote, their franchise. I assume you're going to try and see the same things from the others. And they're going to try to build this thing into some kind of value that's greater than net zero. Because otherwise, when the evaluation of the value of these things comes together, and they all agree, okay, well, we get equity based on our value, and if the PGA Tour has the overwhelming value, then they get the overwhelming portion of it. And that means for the Saudis to get what they want, not only did they just spend a boatload of money on LIV and got nothing out of it, they also have spent or have to spend more money in terms of just straight cash to throw into it to get the equity stake that they want. And I am sure that there will be some kind of minimum percentage. I just assume that, right? I mean, the PGA Tour has to take a reputational risk in working with the Saudis. So they're probably going to demand, if they are in that position, and we do not know that they are, but that's probably going to be one of their goals, is a minimum investment, a minimum commitment of equity to build up their position. So if the tour is like, hey, we have 85% of the value here between our actual assets, and you guys want 25%, well, you need to spend 10% to get in. What's that number? That's how that thing's going to work. And I've seen so many LIV-friendly accounts, people who have probably never analyzed a deal or never even thought about a deal. And I'm not saying I'm the greatest expert of all time, not saying that. But people who insist that the Saudis are operating from a position of strength. I think they're both operating from positions of weakness and positions of strength. And that's what negotiation really is understanding your strengths, your weaknesses, how to mitigate your weaknesses, how to amplify your strengths, and how to get the most from your strengths while hiding your weaknesses. And in this negotiation, the tour has the strength of its brand partners, sponsors, television rights deal, and intrinsic value. The Saudis have the power of money, and they would like to have a less weak value for LIV to come into this thing. Because if the value is nothing, then the PGA Tour, if they get to kind of do the audit on what LIV is going to be moving forward, they're going to go, this thing is no value. Why are we using this? Let's get this thing out of here. That's just going to be how it works. So I think there's some very interesting dancing going on right now on both sides, trying to figure out the politics of it with their own stakeholders, whoever they are. Obviously, LIV has fewer stakeholders. The players are under contract. They can't really do anything. They don't really have any sponsors, and they don't really have a media deal. They can do whatever the heck they want. They have no entanglements, so they can decide how they want to deal with this. The only thing that they can do is build the value of LIV. That's their goal for the next several months. PGA Tours is mostly political. It's, hey, we've got to keep our sponsors. We've got to keep our players happy. We've got to keep our media partners happy. We're going to go do that. That's the next few months for them. So that's what they're setting up. Meanwhile, the other thing I wanted to point out, because this isn't going to take very long, but I do want to point out, because I read it all and I took the time to do it, is from the Larry Klayman lawsuit. So Larry Klayman is a lawyer who started Freedom Watch and has been the lawyer for, he sued his own mom, he sued his own company. I mean, he's a very interesting fellow. And he has represented Patrick Reed in these different little libel lawsuits, slander lawsuits against different people. And that's not gone very well, obviously. But he has also filed a class action lawsuit in Florida court, basically alleging the PGA Tour is screwing its fans by limiting their membership opportunities to players who have been loyal to the PGA Tour. And that has managed to continue to go on because it's not at the federal level, and Florida courts are weird, and there's all kinds of stuff going on there. But as part of that case, they've tried to continue and move on toward some version of discovery. And as part of that, a 357, it's well north of 300 pages, document trove got dumped onto the circuit website. I think it was the 15th circuit. I don't remember exactly. But obviously I was traveling around and started to see some tweets and saw a story, of course, from Sports Illustrated, the only group that really covered this at first, because they received versions of these documents that were posted publicly, by the way. They were posted publicly to the court website, and they were downloaded by this guy, Desert Duffer LLG, maybe? I think he is one of the co-hosts of a LIV Golf Friendly podcast. And we've had, I believe he's an attorney, maybe an agent. He hasn't shared his identity with me, but he's tried to argue with me in the past. Very live-friendly, very snarky guy, which, hey, that's your life. You do what you gotta do. Not necessarily been right on a whole ton of things, but he has his perspective, right? So he downloaded these documents and then started kind of screenshotting them and showed them to Bob Herrig. Bob doesn't do a whole lot of court stuff. That's really more Alex Maselli, who's an attorney by trade, but I guess he hadn't looked at the documents. But anyway, he screenshotted them and put his own watermark on them to make them seem like they were exclusive. And hey, good on him for kind of sitting out the court website. I'm sure Larry Klayman was like, hey, they got posted, you should get these. Because that's all kind of a tight network over there. But nevertheless, I wanted to kind of look at the documents. So I read over them one late night while I was sitting in a hotel bed in Alabama. And I didn't really take a whole lot from the documents. He tried to, this guy, Desert Duffer, tried to make them seem like a bigger deal than I think that they were. And if you understand what's happened in the last, really from 2020 onward, none of these documents are a surprise to anybody, I think. But if you don't understand what's going on, then you try to treat them like they're a big deal. So these documents are a mixture of emails, presentations, some important stuff, some internal documentation from the tour around when they first made their investment in European Tour Productions. So European Tour Productions is kind of the European Tour's arm of media. Basically, they kind of store a lot of value in that because that's how their media rights deals are set up. And that was a way for the tour to invest in the European Tour, help them financially long before really the live stuff came along. But it was kind of all in the background, the Super Golf League and the Premier Golf League. But they made an investment basically in this arm to own a good chunk of it. So that was kind of the first step toward buying the DP World Tour, buying the European Tour Group. And that was never kind of formally said, like, hey, this is the first step. But if you understood what was going on, you knew that's what it meant. Because then if you acquired all of European Tour Productions, then you would own effectively the European Tour. Not exactly, but you basically would, ipso facto. And they made that investment. And then these documents basically, what the kind of big takeaways from it is that, okay, well, the PGA Tour is going to eventually buy the DP World Tour. And they are going to do so because they can, they see the value in it. Here are the dangers of that deal, like Rolex Series sponsorship going away. Rights deals aren't that big. They only last through like 2026. Different stuff like that. Like standard M&A activity. And they called the DP World Tour a distressed asset, a borderline distressed asset. Well, it is. I don't know what to tell you, but that's not a shocker. The DP World Tour has not been in great shape for a long time. The reason is that it doesn't make a whole lot of money outside of the Ryder Cup. And they own the biggest chunk of Ryder Cup Europe. They basically fund themselves every couple of years based off of the Ryder Cup proceeds. And when they host it, it's an even bigger deal. So the two times they draw huge revenue from when they host and when they have it over here in the United States, that funds them. I don't know what to tell you, but if your business is based on one event almost entirely, then you are a distressed asset because you haven't figured out how to monetize other stuff. So that makes sense from the documentation standpoint that the DP World Tour has been in financial trouble. IMG, the International Management Group, I did not know, this is one thing I did learn, has a sizable debt state, you know, basically a portion of the ownership of the European Tour Group because they put a lot of money into running tournaments and building the tour up over the years. They knew it was in trouble, so they lent money to it. That's why Guy Kinnings is really important at the DP World Tour, one of the biggest officers. He used to work at IMG. He moved over. That all kind of makes sense now why he made that move, because really IMG wanted someone to watch what they put their money into, and that was probably part of the deal. And so that, again, nothing in the documents is like, oh, that's really really scary, or we didn't know that. You could have assumed that or could have implied that if you're just able to kind of figure out what some of the moves in the past meant. But really what Klayman was trying to get at, and with these documents, is that these organizations are trying to screw over LIV by also taking them out of the official World Golf Ranking. And there really wasn't anything of interest in that, I don't think, personally. There were some other intriguing kind of side notes that when the PGA Tour and the European Tour were going to come together into a single tour, they were going to drastically overhaul the schedule. They were going to have at least three, probably closer to a handful of events that were DP World Tour originals, you know, BMW, PGA, Irish Open, Scottish Open, all this stuff. Those were going to be PGA Tour events. And then they were going to figure out the rest of the ecosystem, effectively. You're going to take the best parts of the current DP World Tour schedule, make that part of the PGA Tour, slip out parts of the PGA Tour, perhaps, and make that part of another schedule. And can I make it all work? That's what this is all building to, by the way, if you haven't noticed. This was what this was all building to in the first place. The whole, oh, well, the DP World Tour is now just a feeder of the PGA Tour. Surprise, it has been the entire time. And two, they're just codifying it now because of all of this financial stuff. All of this stuff was going to happen. And then they had this unified front thing against LIV and the Public Investment Fund. And now they are basically joined at the hip because of the agreements that they have and the stuff that the minutiae they've set, you know, set into motion. And the documentation just kind of shows what anybody who kind of knew or had an inkling knew all along, was that the DP World Tour is in financial trouble. And that's why they were willing to entertain this deal with the PGA Tour. That's why they so entertained the deal with the Saudis in the first place about acquiring the DP World Tour. I still, the thing I don't understand, and I would just have to kind of see the email or whatever it is someday that where this is written down, why the Saudis and the DP World Tour didn't get to a deal. I'm very curious about that. And I wonder if the big portion of that was that the PGA Tour had already bought a substantial portion of European Tour productions. This is, again, very much in the weeds stuff. But I think this helps you understand some of why the deal's direction has gone the way that it has and why things have happened the way they have in the last year and change. And frankly, most of the people who talk about this stuff don't remember it, don't know what's going on, or don't remember the past well enough to be able to kind of string it all together. And I'm not saying that my analysis of this is perfect, but I think it leads you closer to the right direction of why some things have happened the way that they have and why some things might happen the way they will in the future. Who knows what those look like. So I wanted to lay it all out here, not get in a whole show worth about these documents because, frankly, there was a lot of nothing in them in my point of view. But I wanted to kind of put all that out there to kind of bring you from where we're going, where we've been, and then we can start moving forward because there was a fairly substantial amount of talk about that while I was kind of out of the loop, but kind of wanted to bring it back all together. Thank you for listening to this episode of Two Off the First. I appreciate it. Again, we'll be back with another episode of Super Current Stuff this afternoon. We'll talk about the U.S. Women's Open, Allison Corpuz. We'll talk about the importance of the venues and the telecast, which I think was very, very good. And we'll also talk a little bit about Randall Stevenson walking away from the PGA Tour Policy Board, what that might imply, what that might mean moving forward. If you catch us as a podcast, please leave us a 5-star review. It helps us reach more people. And if you want to watch us on your TV or on another screen, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel for Golf News Net. You can watch us on our website, golfnewsnet.com. And you can watch us on our OTT apps for Roku and Amazon Fire. We will catch you later. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time on Two Off the First.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.